Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Wednesday the 10th of August. Today I am joined by Duncan Balkan, who is a Watson's Daily ambassador. Hey there, Duncan, how are you doing today?
Hi, Peter, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, very good as always. Right, so what story stood out for you the most in today's Watson's Daily then?
Yeah, so the story that stood out for me is from the Wall Street Journal, and it's about probably the person I talk about most on the podcast, which is Elon Musk. So, specifically the fact that Elon Musk has gone and sold nearly $7 billion worth of his Tesla stock. And this is kind of all about the uncertainty that's currently going on with the on again, off again Twitter deal. Elon Musk, he sold, like I said, another massive amount of Tesla shares. So it's 7.9 million shares, which equates to about nearly $7 billion. And he sold them kind of between Friday and Tuesday, so over the weekend just gone, which leaves him with a minuscule, I guess, compared to what he used to have, 15% of the company left. So neither Musk or Tesla has commented on this, really. Now, I find this interesting for a number of reasons. Firstly, because it's not been that long since he was reassuring everyone that he wouldn't be selling any more shares. So to then flog another $7 billion worth, I think it's a risky move. And I sometimes feel with Elon Musk, he doesn't quite realize, although he probably does because he's incredibly intelligent, but it feels sometimes like he doesn't realize how much like weight his words and actions have. So we've seen in the past how just a single tweet can massively affect the value of a company, whether it be Tesla or another company. And saying that he's not going to sell any more shares and then selling nearly 8 million of them, for me, is a bit of a risky move. I'm not sure if you're another shareholder, you'd be particularly thrilled about that, on the one hand. On the other hand, actually, you might be a little bit happier because 15% of the company left. He's now not as big a potential seller of shares in the future. So I mean, it could go either way on that one. It could be, well, that could destabilize the shares for a bit, or actually long term it could stabilize them, because his personal opinion and whatever happens in his life isn't affecting the company as much, because it's a small amount of shares. I think it's quite interesting at the end of this article in the Daily, you've put the kind of an official statement is probably needed here, because otherwise shares are gonna be a limbo. I think to be fair, that's about bang on, because Again, risky move. It could go either way. I'm not sure which way it will, but you'd imagine for at least the interim, there's either a bit of a bounce in the price of shares, or they could drop a little bit, or just a kind of uncertainty around Tesla, because he's gone and done this after saying he wouldn't without making a statement on it. Which, like I said, I think is a bit of a risky move. So, yeah, what's your take on this?
Yeah, it is a very interesting piece of news. And obviously it comes amid the fact that it is that whole thing with Twitter and, you know, isn't he going to buy it? If he doesn't buy it, he's got to pay them, I think, is a billion dollars. So, yes, it is interesting. It's also, as you rightly pointed out, the fact that he said that the dangerous thing here is he said that he wasn't going to sell any shares, and then he's, as they say, big fat gone and done it anyway, meaning that actually that's not to say that he won't sell any more. But I think if you buy into Tesla, you're buying into Elon Musk as well, and although you as an investor you might be rolling your eyes and going, oh, he's done an Elon again, I mean, you're probably in for the ride, because it's not as if this is outrageous behavior or unprecedented behavior from him. So I think it's not great from a Tesla point of Tesla shareholder point of view. There's no official statement from either Musk or Tesla, but overall you could argue that, well, you know, there is a big seller out of the market. You could say that there's still a lot of possibilities for sales and things. They're still at the forefront of technology. They're still very, you know, they're the most popular car, usually like the Model 3 and stuff. It usually is the most popular electric vehicle in the cars where it's in the countries where it sells.
So, and that's the thing, isn't it? Is actually, no matter what he does personally, you can't avoid the fact that Teslas are being sold more and more. So there's always going to be a little bit of counteraction there, isn't there? You're always going to have the company, the actual product is doing better and better. So actually, are his actions going to have less of an effect, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. You know, so, I mean, maybe people are immune to it. I don't think they will be because, you know, that's a decent slug of shares. But but even so, it's interesting. He can do stuff like this, whereas I reckon that pretty much any other CEO, if they were doing something like this, they would potentially be kicked out, I would have thought, or there'd be calls for their removal. But Elon Musk, so he can do this.
Exactly. I think something you said a couple of minutes ago on that is quite interesting as well, because actually by anyone else's standards, this would be outrageous behaviour.
Yeah.
But by Elon Musk's, it's not.
Mm.
So actually, does it have less of an effect? Because you go, here he goes again, rather than, my word, what on earth is he thinking?
Yeah. And I think, though, having said that, I mean, it is actually, I think it is quite dangerous to think like that, you know, like, oh, here he goes again, because there is a point. So people are being gradually anesthetized to this. And so there is going to be a point when, he could really go off the rails and people just dismiss it when, in fact, it is extremely serious. So I don't know. I mean, anyway, it's interesting. I don't think long term it's really going to harm Tesla shares particularly. But it's, you know, it's not good. And I don't think you can really tell too much about it in terms of what impact this has on the Twitter thing, apart from the fact, I mean, he can more than, you know, he can very easily pay the $1 billion break fee.
Well, exactly. I mean, you could read into that both ways, couldn't you? He's either freed up, like I said, more than enough for the breakup fee, or actually he's freed up enough money to maybe improve the company.
Exactly.
You could, depending what bias you had, you could read into that either way.
Yeah.
Which I tried not to go into that too much, just because I thought, you could interpret that both ways, didn't you, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that was my favourite story in this morning's Watson's Daily Theatre. What was yours?
Well, what I'm going to say now is going to sound boring, but is actually interesting. By the way, I don't say that too much in my life, you know, daily life, is chip makers. So this is another story from the Wall Street Journal, which is talking about chip makers semiconductor makers are talking about a slowdown, because there's the fall in demand of PCs and smartphones and things like that, and we had the CFO of Micron Technology, and they were saying, I mean, their quote was, the market is worse than we thought it would be, and this is after 2 years of shortages. I mean, I think everyone and their dog has heard about semiconductor shortages over the last couple of years. There was even, I even wrote about it and referred to it a bit in today's Watson's Daily, with regard to car sales. Mm. But I think that it seems that the wider, the wider market is seeing mixed signals. So you've got Intel in particular, they have struggled, but then AMD has been okay. You've got TSMC, which is the Taiwanese one, which is facing its own problems because, of course, Taiwan, China versus Taiwan, etc. And then you've got other ones like Samsung and SK Hynix as well of South Korea, who are, I referred to, I think it was last week, where they were wondering about where to shift their production or more new production to the US and move it away from Asia. So I think it's interesting, over the last couple of years, we've basically got very, very used to the fact that there is a shortage of semiconductors. That has led to a shortage in the number of vehicles available on the used market. It's meant a shortage of vehicles available on the new market as well, we've also seen the way that the lack of supply of semiconductors has meant that the semiconductors that have been made available have gone to all the high margin products like, you know, Bentleys, top of the line Mercedes and things like that. So yes, I mean, it's I think that there's a it's interesting to see this slowdown after so long, you know, such a long period where we've seen shortages.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting, I think. The thing that stood out for me in the way you've written this in Watson's Daily today is the fact that Intel, despite all of this, ridiculous busy period where they can't possibly produce chips quick enough and they're running out and there's a shortage. And so you'd imagine their production lines are maxed out at that point. Still reported quarterly losses and downgrading its four-year forecast and things. And for me, that for me was the thing that really shocked me reading this, was actually, what can be done about that? Where does investment need to be made? Where do governments need to put money in terms of manufacturing capabilities? Because it's all very well as going, we need more chips, but if the manufacturers are making a loss when they're, like I said, I would assume a maximum capacity, then there's something not quite right there, I would guess.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to look at them saying, look, there is going to be a slowdown and,
yeah,
I mean, if they're making a loss at maximum capacity, surely they're also be making a loss if it slows down. So
yeah, I mean, it just seems to me that it's the semiconductor market does tend to move in cycles, and what often happens is you'll get a time when there's an oversupply of chips, right? And they become really cheap. Then, you know, demand picks up. Suddenly there's a shortage, because with semiconductor manufacturing, you can't just switch it on and switch it off. It has to, you know, gradually build. You can't really switch it off. So as a result of that, you've had this. So you then see a rise in demand. Chip prices go up. And then that's when they say, oh, we need to build more chip plants. But a chip plant takes about 2 years between it to get built and then supply, and it's really, really expensive to build as well. So it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of money. So it almost seems to me, I was saying to you earlier, this seems like a parallel of this, is what it's like in, say, the London office market, where you'll get a time when companies will say, we need more space, we need more space. The developers say, see that, and they say, okay, well, we're going to make this massive building. And then by the time you get the finance together, the planning, the and the building, etc., by the time the thing actually gets built, quite often you're at the opposite end of the cycle, where, you know, things aren't going so well, there's plenty of space. And then you can't get enough tenants in the building. Similarly with this, it's very hard to judge. But I myself am quite positive about the prospects for semiconductors, because I think at the very least, if you just look at the potential for automotive related growth, actually, I would have thought they'd be all right, because I mean, this, you know, at the moment, in terms of the percentage of electric vehicles versus the number of vehicles on the road in the world at the moment, it's something like, I don't know, it depends what you look at, but 2 or 3% or something like that. So when you consider that we have to, this is not a maybe this will, we have to switch to electric vehicles. It's the law. And so as a result of that, if you just look at automotive on its own, there is a huge potential for upside in electric vehicles. And electric vehicles take more chips than conventional vehicles. So as a result of that, PC demand, there's, you know, things of PC demand, there's going to be more demand for more data centers. I'm absolutely sure of it, because more data is needed, and the amount of, you know, stuff they have to store is going to be, so there's going to be more of that. But there is absolutely, you just can't argue that the amount of chips needed in the automotive industry is not going to rise. It just has to.
Yeah, so, like I said, because that is a legal thing. It's not like we might choose to go more electric. Yeah. We have to.
Yeah. So I think that is that will be a driver. Yes, there may be things that are short term. Maybe there's a bit of a slowdown, but ultimately, I think that things are still going to go very well for semiconductor companies. And I think the other thing as well is that the urge for or the move to try to have more global diversity in terms of the production, to try to diversify out of Asia, I think is that much more urgent at the moment, given the geopolitical situation that we're all in. Mm. And so ultimately, you know, it will be interesting to see how these supply chains change.
Sorry, easy for you to say.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, although yes, there might be some problems over the next year or two, something like that. And although maybe I kind of think, well, surely they're working through backlogs. So they've still got that to be going on with. And then by the time their new stuff comes online, we'll be well into the transition from traditional, you know, conventional cars to electric vehicles. You know, just imagine in a year or two's time, there are going to be more chargers. Batteries are going to be better, range is going to be better, all this kind of thing. It's all going to happen. So I really think that they should be fine.
There we go.
There you go.
I completely agree with you. A long time, I think that's completely right. Like I said, the demand has got to go up in terms of number of units. So like I say, and I agree with the diversifying out of Asia thing as well. We were talking about something similar the other day, weren't we, with US companies being incentivized to move production stateside. I feel like the future may be bright. It just doesn't look great currently.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think. Weather forecasts, cloudy with showers. Ultimately brightening later. Anyway,
there we go.
So there's the semiconductor weather forecast for you today, which I think is a good point to end. But look, thank you very much, as always, Duncan, for your wise words on this podcast. Thank you very much for listeners for listening. And by the way, for people who have actually been very kind and given us some good reviews recently, very, very grateful. Thank you very much for your kind words. If you like this podcast, please it'd be really appreciated if you could write a nice review. So it always helps. All this kind of stuff helps. And you know, it's just us sitting in small rooms on either side of this the internet, I don't know, whatever. We're not like a massive corporation or anything like that. So anything helps. But anyway, thank you very much indeed. Have a great day. We'll be back again soon. Many thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.